Did you ever think how is the backstage for roasting and sourcing coffee in a producing country?
Your podcast with a little bit of Brazilian coffee. Café.
Hello everyone, this is Kelly Stein again, straight from Brazil, the biggest coffee producer in the world. Today we're going to talk about some curiosities backstage of roasting and sourcing coffee in a producing country. But we are not going to talk only about Brazil, we are going to talk about different realities faced in different countries. For this reason, I invited Danilo Lodge. Welcome, Danilo Lodge!
Hello, how's it going?
It is a pleasure having you here in our studio because this guy always travels. I know, everybody's curious to learn more about these particularities about producing countries, but before, I'd like to invite you for a quick and tasty espresso. What about we didn't understand? Don't worry. In my last episode in English, for sure, I started a new section called Espresso, where I'd like to share some moment with you, with my audience. Usually I will read emails, share some messages and inform you some quick news that I find relevant. Well, to start our Espresso time then, I'd like to say how amazing it was Specialty Coffee Expo. I had the opportunity to meet great coffee people, introduce my project and also receive lots of nice feedbacks. It was pretty intense for me, especially after meeting people like David Griswold from the Sustainable Harvest, Karen Cebreros, and even Peter Giuliano, guys. It's really nice. I'm so happy and proud. Thanks very much. This gives me energy to keep going. Another breaking news that we are very excited to announce is the International World Championships. We are going to receive 4 categories. So we are going to receive latte art, coffee in good spirits, brewers and cup tasters, everything together in the same days in November during the International Coffee Week in Belo Horizonte. For sure I'll be there and I record lots of interviews and episodes. I'm so excited and anxious, but I will also prepare a nice surprise for you guys. So I cannot give you more information or details, but I'll keep you posted in the next episodes, okay? Oh, this is also a great opportunity to meet personally Brazilian producers, roasters, baristas, traders, why not? How cool is that? So for sure you're going to find some of them during the event, but to learn more about their region, their lives and their properties, it's better a visit, right? So if you are interested about that, I can help you. My advice would be organize yourself to spend some extra days before or after the show. Our team, because I won't be working by myself for sure, because it's pretty intense and lots of things to organize. Our team will help you to visit 14 different origins if you want here in Brazil. So let's do it, guys. You can hit me an email. My email is kelly@portalcoffia.com. PORTALCOFFEA. So let's talk and make it work, okay? Okay, now that we had our moment, our espresso, let's get back to Danilo. Can you describe your professional routine?
Sure. Nowadays, the chief instructor and the content supplier for all the classes in Wolf Café here in Brazil.
Wolf Café, for those who know, is a roastery.
Exactly. Also, I'm one of the coffee pros for Dalla Corte Machines, Italian brand that I help develop new technologies and also help them in events around the world. Besides that, I give consultings to roasters around the world that they want to create new profiles, they wanted to bring new coffees, and I also helped them sourcing the coffees. And because of that, in the past few years, I've been working a lot with farmers as well and helping them to export their coffees to other countries.
You're coaching baristas too, right?
I'm also coaching baristas for barista competitions. That's also part of one of the things that I do. And sometimes I even give consultings to coffee shops that wants to renew the menu or giving like a specific training for their baristas. So yeah, I do a little bit of everything.
Yeah, he's Brazilian, but he's never in Brazil. That's so hard to find you.
Yeah, it's been 14 years working with coffee, and apparently people found my skills a little bit interesting, but they discovered me elsewhere. So I'm basically spending more time outside Brazil than in Brazil.
And how did your story with coffee start?
It was very by accident. It was like 14 years ago in 2004. I didn't want to work with advertising anymore. So I quit my job, and a friend of mine said, hey, it's going to have like a coffee event, and they need baristas. Are you willing to do it like a 2 days training? It's going to be very simple. It's going to be in a bank Monday through Friday. I was like, okay, let me do it. And so I remember that I arrived there, and there was like 11 people. I was the only guy in that table, and I was the only one who actually asked for a coffee when we were waiting for the people who will give us the training. And I drink coffee since I was 3 years old, so I always liked coffee. But that was my first time drinking. It was not even a specialty coffee, it was a gourmet coffee. And I spot the difference right away. And then I have like a 2 days training with Isabella Raposeiras. That was the first Brazilian barista champion. And
from Coffee Lab?
Yeah, from Coffee Lab. At the time, it was not even called Coffee Lab. It was called Academia de Barismo. She was focused on events and catering events and trainings. So I did the event. It was a major success. I love it. She called me again to do more. So I kept doing it until the point that she asked me to work full-time for her, managing events, also helping with the classes. And from that on, I started studying coffee a lot. I left over there in 2006, and then I started doing my own research, visiting farms. From that time, I didn't speak any English or Spanish, so I...
At all. Because your English or Spanish is really outstanding.
Thank you. I have to practice. If I wanted to learn more, I need to practice. So I start studying by myself till I get to know more people. I start giving consultants to small coffee shops and trainings. And after a while, I was hired for a big company called Carry Foods to work as their barista for South America. And from that on, they encouraged me to be a world barista judge because I was not allowed to compete. So because of that, I met amazing people in my path that helped me a lot. And from the year that I started judging in 2009 till the end of 2010 when I became WC certified judge, it was like a major change in my life. And all these championships that I've been judging all over helped me to know people and get to know more about coffee and gave me access to information that is not available to everyone. So it was really incredible. It was an incredible journey for me, and I'm still learning. Like, I still think that...
We are all.
Yeah. There's still a lot to learn. Like, roasting is something that I learned 8 years ago, and I'm still learning more about it, such as cupping as well. And even barista techniques, like every year there's something new to learn about extraction, about machines, grinders. So I kept trying to keep myself... So I try to keep myself updated.
It's really interesting and have this great experience, and I would like to invite you to share this experience because you're traveling a lot, so you can compare how producing countries are facing roasting and sourcing this coffee. But you also have friends abroad in consuming countries, so the experience of the with this green coffee is completely different.
Yeah, like, it's a completely different world. Like, I've been to Australia, UK, United States, Scandinavian countries, European countries in general. And I've just been last year to Korea, and they're consuming countries that consume a lot of coffee, and they are way ahead of time than producing countries. Because when I see the market in Colombia, that I think besides Brazil is the producing country that I know most, but also I've been several times to Guatemala, El Salvador, Costa Rica, Panama, Ecuador, Peru, and we are still... Even like here in Brazil, we're still getting track on specialty coffee. When we focus on specialty coffee consumption, it's still a small market. It's not big.
Domestic market,
you mean? It's a domestic market. It's really small. Like, the...
I think it's 20 years old in Brazil.
Yeah, here in Brazil, it's around that. It's around 20 years. But like, the first specialty coffee shops in Brazil, they date 2002, 2003. So it's not even 20 years that the consumer has the access to specialty coffee in their own countries. And Colombia, it's even behind us, because I remember being there.
It's younger, yeah.
Yeah, like, I've been in Bogota 2010 for their fifth barista championship, and there was no good coffee shops in town. And nowadays, it's exploding. Like, you can find in Bogota a lot of good coffee shops to drink coffee, but I remember in 2010, there was none. And after the World Barista Championship happened there in 2011, people were a little bit more aware about specialty coffee, so they start asking for, and people start seeing a market to put their own roastery or in their own coffee shops. But it's something new. Like 2012, I've been to Guatemala. Also, there was like one good coffee shop, and it was in Antigua, not even Guatemala City. Nowadays, like there's like an area like in downtown, and it's beautiful. You can find like several different coffees roasted by different people, beautiful service, great machines. So it's growing. But when you go like to United States or Australia, UK,
yeah, you cannot compare because
yeah, they are way the years ahead of us. It is amazing. And but I think we will catch up. Like nowadays, we have more globalized knowledge. It's easier to have access to information. When I started in this business, it was a little bit hard to get information from everything. And nowadays, it's way more simpler to get that.
Now we have in Brazil a podcast.
Exactly. Like there's no podcasts at all at the time, or websites or videos. So nowadays, I think we are catching up. All the producing countries are catching up with the information, the trends, and we will set up a high bar for all the specialty coffee consumers and specialists in the world.
Every day, the world consumes 300 tons of caffeine, enough for one cup of coffee for every man, woman, and child. The world's largest buyer of coffee, the U.S., has to import nearly all of this, as the coffee trees from which caffeine is harvested will only grow at commercial levels between the Tropic of Cancer and the Tropic of Capricorn in an area called the Coffee Belt. Only a single state, Hawaii, is within this belt. However, the United States is only the largest buyer because it's so populous. The most enthusiastic coffee drinkers per capita are, in increasing order, the Netherlands, Denmark, Iceland, Norway, and, the world champions, Finland, where they drink three times as much coffee a day as the average American. All of these countries are outside the coffee belt and must import 100% of their caffeine supply.
So let's focus in the curiosity. Okay. What are the benefits of being a roaster in a producing country with this very limited domestic market?
Yeah, well, one of the things that people always assume is you're in a producing country, you're just like half an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours away from a farm, right? So you
Which is true.
It's true. It's true. Like El Salvador, Costa Rica, you're literally half an hour away from a farm, a very good farm. So, but at the same time, you have the access to those farmers. But as you said, it's still a new market. So you don't have a lot of demand for specialty coffee. So you're going to have a few roasters. They want to buy one, two, maybe three bags from that crop. And sometimes it's not the whole lot. And the producer are not interested to sell if not the whole lot. But the advantage is they can build long-term relationship. The producers are there. They speak the same language. So it's really fruitful relationship long-term. But when you start it, it's a little bit more difficult. The producer always look at you like, who are you? Like, nobody drinks specialty coffee here in my country.
Why do you give me special attention?
Exactly. Why do you want to buy my coffee? How did you learn about me? So at the beginning, you see that. I can say, for example, Wolf Café here in Brazil. I remember seeing his first year and people didn't know who he was. So he was like trying to get samples and people to sell coffee to him. And there was not a lot of people willing to do it. And after a few years, when he gained a name, Hugo made for like a very good brand here. So sometimes he receives samples that he doesn't even know where it comes from because people want him to buy their coffee. But it's not, at the beginning, it's not that easy. You have to search a lot. You have to go find. And again, you, even if you're in a producing country, sometimes you're going to be in a big country like Brazil or Colombia. It's going to be hard for you to find everywhere. They're not going to be in expos sometimes. So you're going to have to just start traveling a lot till you find the right profile of cup that you wanted for your roaster.
From my experience, these producers, they really trust in exporters, traders.
They do a lot. When we are talking about specialty coffee producers, they trust a lot the importers, exporters, the traders, the brokers, because they guarantee that all the quality that they achieved during processing and harvesting and everything will be value in the price point when they sell the coffee. So they focus more in exporting these goods because, as we spoke at the beginning, overseas they are already developed. So they already pay a little bit more for a cup of coffee, which makes the roaster pay a little bit more for the pound of green coffee as well. Makes sense for the producer wanting to sell it and export this coffee. But it's also important to keep a little bit here. So, otherwise, we're never going to develop the local market. And I see more potential growth in producing countries than non-producing countries. For example, in Scandinavia, like the average per capita consumption is 10 kilos, right? Here in Brazil, we're between 5 to 6.
And it's not only specialty.
It's not only specialty. We're talking about general coffee. So if we expand the consumption here, will be great. Like, it will grow a little bit more and they can produce and sell more specialty coffee inside their own country. Same thing happens in Colombia when the average is around 2 kilos of consumption. And again, it's not all specialties, the whole coffee. So there is a lot of potential to grow in consuming specialty coffee in producing countries. So there is a benefit for the producers to pay attention a little bit more in the local market.
But the domestic market willing to pay a fair price?
That's a point as well. We have to think about producing countries, about the economy as well. Like, let's think about all Latin America. That's the market that I know most. We are not in a very good financial situation in none of the producing countries. So it's a little bit hard to compete against buyers from Korea, from China, Japan, US, Canada. First, they have a stronger currency than us. Second, if they really want it, they will pay 10, 20 cents more for the pound, which will make very difficult for a local roaster to cover that price. So I know just a few people, they have the monetary income to actually pay that. So it's not all the time that happens, unfortunately. And I totally understand the producer. He wants to make more money with his coffee. What the roaster has to do, find another coffee sometimes.
So this is the challenge here.
It is a very big challenge. The price point is a very big challenge.
For the local roasteries.
For the local roaster, because they are in a country that doesn't have like a lot of people willing to pay more for coffee. They are still struggling to make people understand what specialty coffee is. So they're still teaching about specialty coffee. And they also have the competition from other non-producing countries that can pay with a stronger currency a little bit more from the same coffee. So it is a struggle. It's not easy.
You even told me before in backstage that some roasteries has shortage. They cannot find green coffee, good green coffee, because the producers are selling abroad. Can you imagine these guys, a producing country, the local roastery doesn't find?
Yeah, like it's something that people all know that that's not possible, and it is. And it's something that I saw in Ecuador happen last year. I saw in Costa Rica happening this year. I saw in Guatemala happening this year. So they didn't.
It's more often than we thought.
It's more often than we thought. We thinking about producing countries. Oh, coffee's over there. It's on their backyard, so it's easy. Well, depends. Yes, it will have coffee, but we'll have specialty coffee, the high quality coffee that you as a specialty roaster wanted, or that coffee was already sold out for a non-producing country.
Do you see like micro roasteries an increasing movement in Latin America?
I see a lot. It's incredible, especially the past 5 years. I see an increase of new specialty coffee roasters all over Latin America. Central America was a little bit behind, but now they are catching up. So I see like roasters in like Sikawa in Costa Rica, Paradigma in Guatemala. You see like Viva Espresso doing a great job with Four Monkeys in El Salvador. Panama was amazing, like how big they're growing now, like with Unido, Paddle, and even like the Lamasas family has their own roaster. So it's growing and it's growing fast. Colombia, again, I don't even remember all the names of micro roasters in Colombia. And here in Brazil, especially, like I remember 8 years ago, there were maybe
none.
In São Paulo. Yeah. No, there were a few. Like I remember that if I want to buy specialty coffee, I will have Suplicy, I will have
Otávio.
Santo Grão Otávio, but that was basically it. There was Coffee Lab was starting at the time, like they started in 2009, but they get traction in 2010. But then now you see like Wolf Café, you see even like not focusing only in São Paulo, but you see like in the south, Four Beans and Baden, a lot of roasters coming up in Rio, in Brasilia, northeast of the country. So it's spreading.
It's popping everywhere.
Yeah, it's popping everywhere. Good specialty roasters.
I see this movement happy, but I'm concerned about quality. Are these people knowing how to roast good coffee?
I think we still have a long way to learn, specifically in producing countries. Not only people are getting a little bit behind with old ways of roasting.
And equipment too, because it's expensive.
It is very expensive. That's a very good point. I was just talking with Fabiola from Curitiba, and it's very hard for you to start a roasting business in a producing country. Let's face it. Brazil, we have three national manufacturers, right? So it's a little bit of an edge against other producing countries. Like Colombia, I know one local...
You mean like commercial brands or commercial industry?
Yeah. Like okay. Colombia, they have one local brand. But if you're a roaster in any other producing country, you have to import a good roaster. So you have to import from Europe, from US, sometimes from Israel, whatever. You need to import. That's huge. That's massive. You're going to pay in another currency.
Three times more expensive than real.
And you're going to have to buy that equipment and bring to the country. Sometimes you don't have a license to import something. You have to go through someone else. So you're going to pay the taxes. It's not easy to start a specialty roasting facility in any producing country. Sometimes you can buy a local product, but it's not going to be as good as other that are made elsewhere. So you really need to look up what is the best way to do it. But that's a major point that makes people not willing to put a lot of money on start, because first of all, they don't have. Second, like, either they will have like a good roasting class or they're going to need to pay like a better equipment. So I still need, there's a lot of room for improvement in producing countries, but it's a learning curve. We need to start doing it. And after we start doing it, we can start getting better and more skilled about the roasting craft.
Brazil is by far the world's largest producer. With over 3 billion coffee plants, it provides around one-third of total global production. Vietnam comes in second, producing over 27 million bags of mainly Robusta coffee. Colombia comes in third, with over 13 million bags, mostly of Arabica coffee. Indonesia narrowly misses out on a medal and comes in at a close fourth place with 11 million bags of both Robusta and Arabica production. Between them, these four countries produce over 60% of the world's coffee. How about that?
I was talking to international visitors here in São Paulo, and they were making some thoughts. They gave me some insights comparing the roasting profile here and what do they have, for example, in Europe. Because even for the specialty, our roasting profile is darker, right? And maybe this can affect the way that tourists see the Brazilian coffee.
Well, it's relative, I think. First, I really don't like to talk about a color normally because it doesn't actually show the coffee
potential
or flavor. But indeed, if you look our coffee compared to Scandinavian coffee or even like some roasters in Germany, it will be slightly darker. If you compare it to a few places in US or Italy, Spain, no, our coffee is going to be lighter. So it's a little bit relative. Depends how you compare them, where you're looking, where you're coming from and looking at what standpoint you're looking.
I'm not even talking about the industry. I'm talking about specialty.
I'm talking about specialty as well. But I understand that. I don't think it's also only related to color. I think we need to learn a little bit more. And that's part of the challenge of being a roaster in a producing country. There's a few things that people elsewhere, there's a few problems over here about roasting that people don't find that.
Example.
If you're thinking about, oh, beautiful, I have a fresh harvest, a fresh crop in my warehouse. Great. So the coffee was harvested 2 weeks ago and I can roast it right now. When someone else from, I don't know, Australia, it will take them 2 months to put the hands on the coffee after it was dried, right? Okay, it's not easy to roast the coffee that was rested for 2 weeks or a month. The coffee is still changing. It passed through a lot lot of stress from picking, from drying, for all the bagging and everything, and shipment to your place. And it's still, there's the molecules are still moving, it's still a living thing. And you do the profile, and it's really hard to do it for when it's too fresh. And after you make it, a month later,
it's another coffee.
It's another coffee. So if you follow the same profile, it's not going to be the same taste. Even if you have all the due diligence to do it perfectly, it's not going to taste the same because the coffee already changed. Plus, we are in tropical countries. Normally, the producing countries in an equatorial line. So we have
hotter and more humid.
Exactly. Even if you have a specific environment to keep the coffee, as soon as you take it out to roast, you will
absorb temperatures.
Exactly. Yeah. The temperature, the humidity. So it's not easy to find a profile. And then you have another problem that you're not going to find in the non-producing country. Let's take an example, Brazil, right? Normally, the harvest here, the earliest that I can find is end of April. Like, that's the earliest. And it's like beginning of the harvest, and it's just one or two, three farms, right? So let's say it's beginning, end of April, beginning of May. 2 weeks till rest, so probably middle of May, I will have something. Doesn't mean it's gonna be good. I'll have something, right? If in March, I close a deal with a big customer, chain, whatever, and I have in my warehouse
a demand that you didn't plan.
Exactly. What am I going to do? I can't import coffee from other country. What am I going to do? I'm going to tell the tree, grow faster, please.
And
I
if
need
you
coffee.
Say to your customer, like, I don't have coffee, say, what?
Yeah, exactly. So sometimes you're going to be in another country. You're just going to find another importer, or you're going to talk with a producing country and see what they have, or you will replace Colombia from a Peruvian coffee. You will do something. You will be able to do something.
Here in Brazil, we are limited.
Not only in Brazil, all producing countries. Last week, I was in Costa Rica, and I went to, there was a coffee expo happening. So I was with a roaster, and he was like, a customer called me and order, but he didn't have any more, and the coffee was still resting. Like, the coffee that he needed was a natural, needed like at least a month of resting. So he called the farmer and said, like, I need a bag right now. So I drove with him to the farm. He grabbed the bag, he roast the coffee. He didn't have even time to do a different profile because it was such a short notice that he just did the same roasting profile that he did for the year before. Because on Wednesday, a guy ordered his last kilo that he was supposed to bring to the expo. Thursday, he went to the farm. Friday, he roasted. Saturday and Sunday was the coffee expo.
Oh my
goodness.
So he
didn't even time to taste and redo the profile if there was something wrong. And it happens in every producing country. It's great. Oh, hey, I have a demand that I didn't expect it.
But at the same time, you build an expectation, you're a client, and all of a sudden you don't have the product. So
exactly.
It's not good for the business.
No, it's not. It's not sustainable. You need to think. And at the same time, you cannot commit to buy more if you're not going to sell it. What are you going to do? Like, you have 10 other bags stuck in your warehouse. You don't have anyone to sell it. You did like a forecast that was not really realistic. So you didn't sell it. What are you going to do?
Exactly.
It's a risk that you can't take. It's too much money that you're going to waste with that.
Interesting. Some people, I didn't think about it. True.
Yeah. Like, it's something that I'm seeing more and more. Like, I had a business outside Brazil in Argentina a few years ago.
It's a coffee shop or
a
roastery?
Yeah, it was a coffee shop and a roastery.
Okay.
I remember that was actually, I remember the Colombian coffee was coming to an end. I was like, no worries. I'm just going to ask the importer to bring from somewhere else, period.
Perfect.
And then I was like, hey, 2 years ago, I was in Brazil. Same problem happened. I was desperate because what am I going to do? And now that I'm traveling to producing country and helping roasters, and I'm seeing this happening often and often in everywhere, like, you can put yourself at risk and buy more than you can sell. And at the same time, you're going to have like maybe a new customer coming up that is going to be great for your business, but it will end all your coffee before harvest season even started.
I think for the roasteries, it's really challenging. It doesn't matter where you are. Because if you're in Japan or Australia, this coffee will take, 2 months to arrive to the final...
But you also have local importers that they keep a little bit of inventory, right? From different countries.
They have plan B's,
Yeah, they have
C's,
plan B.
Okay.
Yeah, you see, there is brokers with... different coffees that were harvested in different parts of the year, then maybe you choose something different. But if you're roasting in a producing country that doesn't allow you to import anything else, yeah, you basically screwed.
It's funny you say that. And the Brazilian coffee, we have nowadays 14 origins, different yes. origins with different profiles.
Which helps a lot. Like Brazil have very big windows of harvesting season. Colombia had two harvests. Kenya as well. But if you're thinking about a scenario of Ecuador or Peru, Colombia, Central America in general, yeah, they don't. They have one harvest every year and they have to figure out how much they're going to buy. A lot of people interested in those magnificent coffees. The producer probably won't export the majority of it. And if you don't have the right math, you end up with an empty warehouse.
You know, what is the trick then to survive? Because it's you're living on the
we're
edge all the time.
Yeah, we're still learning. There's no right answer. But what I'm seeing is happening, always a plan B. So you always talk with other, you help develop other producers that are not even exporting yet, not even producing a specialty. So as soon as you start growing as a roaster, the more sustainable thing to do is start helping the neighbors of the farmers that you're buying the coffee. Help them to improve the quality through things that you already know about drying process.
Post-harvest.
Post-harvest in general, that stuff that you need to learn for you to keep the quality of your own coffee, and you can pass it along and make other producer interesting and start selling to you. After a while, they will start going to export this coffee as well.
Exactly, but you spend lots of money and energy to develop this producer.
Yes.
And sometimes, let's say after three harvests, this guy is just turning the back and going to sell.
It does happen. It does happen, unfortunately. It comes like someone from Asia, pays like the double that you're used to pay, and they were going to sell it. And okay, what can you do? Like, yeah, I know. It's hard. You can do agreements to at least keep something for you. But if we don't help the producers, we maybe end up without coffee. And that's a challenge that I see a lot of countries that are not producing countries, but they come to Orange to help because they want to keep the quality in their coffees. And I love that. There's a guy that I'm a friend of him. He's called Richard Conley from Raw Material and Flight Coffee in New Zealand. Sorry, huge fan. And he helps a lot of farmers all around the world. We judge together at WBC. And we always talk about how cool it is to help everyone else. And maybe sometimes a farmer will start selling to someone else. But he made that region grow in coffee in general.
I see.
So he has more options now to buy because of that. And it's one of the things that as a producing country, you also have to do it if you want to improve.
And expand.
And if you want to sell more bags, you need to find where to buy more bags. Either someone who's already doing a good job or helping someone that are still in a track to do it, help them to accomplish.
Perfect. It's funny we are talking about the roastery's perspective, but how do these producers see the specialty coffee market? It's like an enigma, something mystery for them.
So they don't know what to expect, and that's the beauty of it, because they are used to export their coffee or just produce locally for not specialty coffee, just for the local market. And someone comes up, wants to buy their coffee, and they buy and do a good job roasting. It's beautiful when you send back a bag. I saw it happen already a few times, and they love, because at the end, they're helping their own country. They're seeing the end product of all the labor that they put, all the hours and months put it into that particular coffee, coming to life in such a beautiful way. And there's people in their own country drinking that. It makes them really, really proud. But at the beginning, they don't know what to expect. So I advise you, if you're a roaster in a producing country, just as soon as you find the right profile, give one bag back to your producer. They will love it.
Sample.
Just send a small bag, like a quarter of kilo bag, for them to try it. Even if you have the opportunity, even make it to them. They're going to love it. It's a different experience, and it's going to make them really, really proud about all the work that they did in all the harvesting year.
And here we start to understand the value in this chain, right?
Exactly, because when they export, it's not every time that they are going to be able to see that coffee coming to life. But when they sell it to the local market for a very very good roaster. They can
see a fair price.
Yeah, look, they're paying a lot of money in my coffee, and they loving. And there's magazines talking about, blogs, people making video, posting pictures on Instagram, and you give it a little bag back to them.
What
and
I it's can just see like, here in São Paulo is some producers, they are like big stars.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
In coffee events, they are really proud because people recognize them, their face, their family.
And the name, because the roaster put their name on it.
Yeah, it does it happen in other countries producing?
It does, it does. Like I saw this happening in Guatemala, in Costa Rica, in Ecuador, and it's amazing. People get really, really proud. Hey, you want to drink? Oh, you should go to this coffee shop because they sell my coffee.
Exactly.
So
yes.
It makes them so proud, and it's and so happy. And you just keep the relationship going and growing with them.
It's really nice. Thank you very much for sharing all this knowledge and this backstage. I hope that you are listening this. Think about your domestic market too. If you're privileged in a consuming country, see that producing countries' roasteries, they face some challenges.
A lot of it.
And for sure, you're going to listen about the neurology here in Coffee more often.
Thank you very
because
much.
Because you have lots to share. Thank you very much for coming.
No, that was my pleasure. Thank you.
Coffee, 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 co